Voyage à Oslo. Capsule sonore numéro 3. Fragment d'un paysage culturel. Nous retrouvons Camara Lundstad-Juf, directrice du Dramatikon Hus, maison de la dramaturgie à Oslo.
We don't do any performances, we don't sell any tickets. We are just a research and development center for new dramatic writing and also always redefining what does a playwright make, you know, and what is stage text. That's what a lot of what we do also here in experiment. There are some playwrights that are like Fredrik that sit alone in their desks and do the writing and then send the text. Mm-hmm. But there are very many different ways of creating and collaborating in developing new dramatic writing. So that's part of what we do here, like a research hub. So we have a lot of grants that we give away, both writer stipends. We have a dramaturg database where we try to put playwrights and dramaturgs together so you can apply for dramaturg support, both from the dramaturgiat that works here. It's 3 dramaturgs that work here full time. But we also have a database with 80 dramaturgs where we try to combine dramaturgs with playwrights. But you can also apply for workshops. And a workshop here is you send in your text or your project or where you are at, and then we have a big main hall here that I can show you a bit later, and then we have a smaller stage as well, and a writer's loft, and we do our workshops in these spaces where if I read a text then I can see where the playwright is stuck or what the text needs to get further in development. Mm-hmm. We try to figure out how we can best help the playwright in realizing their idea, and sometimes that's just one day with a group of actors in the loft reading the text out loud and discussing it. Sometimes it's a full week with maybe a choreograph or a composer or a director or 7 actors trying to work it on the floor and then have an audience showing after a week. But to figure out how to best crack the code for the playwright to develop their text, that's what we do. So we are only part of the development process of the text. The second the text is done, it has nothing to do with us. Then we give it to someone else. Then the playwright owns the text and the playwright goes and finds a theater or a company that wants to produce it. And mm-hmm. we don't co-produce, we don't go into production, we don't have the premieres. That will always be a challenge. I think that the Norwegian theater scene is very much closer to the German one when it comes to how we program our theaters. That it's very director led, it's very director based. So a lot of directors choose to work with novels or classics, so they can do like their own artistic modification of it. So. And then there are some directors that choose to work with contemporary playwriting, but from the institution's side, it is very much director focused. And then I would say that 30 years ago in Norway, it was way more common that the playwright could sit alone and write a perfect play in their living room or office, and then send it to a dramaturgiat, and then the theater would say, oh, this is brilliant, we have to stage it. That almost never happens anymore. Oh. Now the theater will say, what is Fredrik doing? That's interesting. Fredrik, what are you doing in 29? Would you write something for us?
Yes.
And then it's the playwright that has the gets the stage and gets a deal with the theater. And then they develop together, like, what do you want it to be about? But how big of a cast, my ensemble, which director? So it's more of artistic-led than it is piece-led, which makes it very, very difficult for new playwrights, emerging playwrights, to get a foot in the door, because you, in some ways, already need an artistry to be interesting enough for the head of the institution to say, what are you thinking about? So that's tricky. So that's a lot of what we politically hear, or artistically here, are because we have given a lot of funding for individual plays, but see that those plays almost never within the institution based. But then you have the performing arts sector that is non-institutional, which works very differently, like the project-based companies that work work with the new dramatic writing as well. And then everything is contemporary and everything is new. But then it's often the playwright and the director run the companies together. And it's more like smaller institutions in themselves that collaborate with the biggest institutions or perform other places in programming scenes. That was a long answer. But that's how we do it in many ways. So now we're trying to figure out how can we build artistry more than focus on funding the individual plays. Because to become a good playwright, you also need to be able to write something really shitty. You have to write something that's bad before you can write something that's good, and to be able to fail. But you also need to see your texts produced to be able to grow and see what worked and what didn't work. And that's tricky when the stages usually are for the more established. But then you have Vega Sene, right, that do much more of the new contemporary writing. But because of their funding situation, I would call it like the curse of the monologue. It's so many monologues because just one actor, so it's cheap. And very often it's the playwright that's always also an actor, so the playwright is also performing itself, themselves, a lot. So that also means something for what kind of practice you get as a playwright, if it's always the monologue or always max two characters. So there's very few that get to write like the big dramas and try to. And then I would say that in the freelance performing arts field, it's very much more political and very much more experimental political activist than the institutions are opening up for. And then you have some collaborations. But historically, or like for the past 10 years in Norway, there has been a lot of very political productions of theater that has gotten a lot of public interest and debates, and we have some very like specific cases, both of some censorship or threats, and you have the right wing versus artists working with anti-fascism, and then we have the very famous Ways of Seeing example, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with, of the performance Ways of Seeing, which was a performance that premiered in 2019 at Black Box Theater, which was a free freelance company that did it, which was a performance that was part of, it was trying to map right-wing networks and follow the money of the surveillance state of Norway. So the artists videotaped famous politicians' houses, which became a huge public debate, where the right-wing government, like that we had then with the Progress Party, which is a right-wing party that was in coalition with the Conservative Party, they had the Minister of Justice. His house was filmed and showed in the performance. You couldn't see where it was, but his house was filmed. And then there became different terrorist threats to the house of the Justice Minister. So the artists were blamed of putting the politicians in dangerous positions, of calling them racist, and then having right-wing extremists attacking their houses. So the prime minister went out and said that the artists were making it more difficult to be a politician and they were a danger to democracy. And then in the end, it turned out that it was the justice minister's wife staging the attacks on her own house. So she was arrested for then terrorist threats to democracy and put in jail. And he had to resign. So it was a very big, very big political case for many years it took for the court case against her and then the court case again. Yes, so it was not uncomplicated. But then it really showed that the Norwegian society in many ways was very unprepared to defend the artists, because the artists had broken no laws. Everything was within artistic expression, and they had been very, very adamant on not stepping over any boundaries, only filming from accepted places, not identifying stuff, and sometimes also not filming their real houses and then just working with fiction. But the media storm that presented this also did that the artists got a lot of death threats from the right wing, so they had to have police protection and escorts. And the half of the artistic team also had a minority background, immigrant background, so it also became a big part of the asylum debate, because one of the artists has a residency here because of asylum that she was granted when she was 6 years old. So, because she was Kurdish Iraqi. So it became a clusterfuck of epic proportions. It became a big political storm. Yeah. So we have these kinds of examples that are in some ways isolated and then in some ways not, because you can see the structure of the cultural sections of the media not being paired to talk about artistic expression, but talking more about the sensationalism around it. So that has been it's an example that we keep returning to. And then of course we have other instances also of the right wing mobilizing against mostly artists with minority backgrounds, but also artists that are very politically left wing in their in their messaging. Mm-hmm. So that you can see, and in between that you also have artists that want to explore more like right wing media and what is happening, and then you have artistic colleagues boycotting their shows and saying that you are so it's been a lot of public debate around freedom of artistic expression, and then self-censorship of seeing your colleagues stand in these storms and then deciding not to write about it, or deciding not to create something that because the cost of the media storm is so big. So I think that we see a lot of tendencies in that. So there is this big research project that has been being mapping again for the past 2 years, self-censorship within artists, where a lot of artists then say that they have become more careful in what they say because of social media, because of the mobilization of the trolls and of the Twitter feeds and such. So yeah, it's a big discussion. Yeah.
Fragment d'un paysage culturel. Petit documentaire enregistré à la volée dans le cadre de la bourse de mobilité artistique Culture Moves Europe de l'Union européenne pour un projet de coopération entre la France et la Norvège. Réalisation Lola Molina et les Lieux Pelotons, Théâtre de Poche Européen, Compagnie Léna. Avec le soutien de Bourges, capitale européenne de la culture 2028.